The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
All right. Hey, John, how we doing?
I'm still doing great, DJ. How are you?
Still doing good?
Yeah.
How was your week?
Oh, it was good, man. How about you?
I had a good week. Good week. I went to my daughter's dance over the weekend, and while sitting there watching the dance, in one of the dances, they did this, like, impressionist dance or something, but they had a backdrop of, well, basically, you know, like, every scene in any space movie when they go to light speed and they have all the stars flying by.
Yeah, like on Star Wars when they make the jump to hyperspeed.
Yeah, and all those stars go flying by. Well, right. While I'm sitting there watching this impressionist dance routine, which one of the dances my daughter wasn't in, so I had an opportunity to, you know, start thinking about other things. I'm watching the backdrop, and it's doing the whole stars flying by. The only difference was it was actually looked like it was from the back window, so the stars were in reverse.
Okay.
So, it got me to thinking, that wouldn't happen.
That's always a dangerous thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, I've been thinking about it since then, but through the entire dance routine, I couldn't stop thinking that that wouldn't happen.
Okay.
So, when you...
Explain.
So, if... All right, this is what I was thinking. If you're flying through space, right?
Right.
And if... Given that every single one of those stars you see is... a sun, right?
Right.
And the closest, what's the closest sun other than our own? Isn't it like, what, like 100, like light years away or something? Or even further?
Okay.
Okay, but you see what I'm saying? It's like they're really far away.
Yeah.
So if you jump to light speed, they wouldn't go flying by you. They're not just off the bow of your ship. They're really far away.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, if you're driving through the middle of the country and you have a guardrail right next to you, you can't see each guardrail go by. You can't see them. You know what I mean? They blend together if you're looking off to the side of your car. But, you know, 200 miles in the distance, you see the Rocky Mountains. They're not flying by you like you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So what you're saying is you had way too much time on your hands.
I don't understand impressionist dance. It was like all of these girls, they're very talented. And it was, I mean, every now and then you'd be like, oh, look at what she's doing over there. But they were all doing something different. The dances my daughter's in, you can see like it's, I don't know. I don't understand dance to begin with, but I just don't understand dance. But they're all, like I said, they're very talented. It was awesome to watch, but they're all doing different things. So I didn't know if that, is that really choreographed or are they all just up there going nuts, doing their own thing?
They're just doing whatever they want every show.
And I know they're not, and I did think this during the dance too, that, you know, I've been to hockey games. I coach a lot of hockey, and I've heard people say, now, do they all just go out? Like when they do a line change, you see all the guys go over the boards and... a new, you know, new set comes on, old set goes off, whatever. And do they have positions or do they just go out and whoever gets to the puck first get, and you just bang your head against the wall going, oh my God, I can't believe you don't know that. And I'm sure, you know, all our dancing listeners are right now banging their heads against the wall. Like, of course there's a choreography and it's all very intricate. And I apologize to all of those listeners.
Well, we do have a huge dance contingent that listens to us. So
I was sitting
dancing in comics are like peanut butter and jelly. Yeah. So they just go together.
Right, yeah. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching this and you know then my daughter comes on. I get to see that. That's when I concentrated. And then afterwards I was sitting with my daughter's boyfriend and we started talking about this. And he was just like, I see what you're saying, but he couldn't. I don't think he wanted to engage with me. Like, I think I'm totally wrong on it. So I think he's smarter than I am, like most people. So, but it was pretty funny. But
well, you notice I'm not engaging with you either.
Exactly.
So.
It's like, but you see where your mind goes. but at least it was like, you know, science related, comic book related.
Right. Science fiction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, anything else? What'd you do this week?
Well, not a whole lot. I mean, I spent some time catching up on Young Justice, trying to get ready for season three. So I'm about three quarters of the way through season one right now, and I might start again because I know they just dropped the enhanced.
Did you see it?
No, I haven't because, like I said, I've been catching up over last week. I haven't watched it in two or three nights, but I was going to spend some time tomorrow getting caught trying to finish first season. And like I said, I may have to start again if
they have three episodes.
You know, I want to watch the enhanced.
Yeah, they have three episodes out now on enhanced, Young Justice Enhanced. I watched the first one, and you know, I don't think we have to worry about spoilers with Young Justice, but
no.
The first one is they talk about Infiltrator, which I think is like the sixth episode or something like that.
Okay, so it's not actually all the episodes
in
order?
No, as a matter of fact, they go so if you look at Young Justice Enhanced, episode one is called Infiltrator, but that's like the sixth episode. I think the second episode is actually they talk about what was it? It wasn't episode one, but the third episode of Enhanced is talking about the first episode of the season.
Okay.
So yeah, you don't have to go. It doesn't go in order. They just, you know, they basically just kind of do like a take of like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type deal. I wasn't crazy about it at first, the way they do it. So like I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you have, but you've listened to audio commentary on movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you'll hear the director talk over the movie. They bring the volume of the movie down. You hear the director. Well,
right.
What they were doing is they were showing, they'll show the episode and then they'll slide these people in graphically over the animation and you see them talk.
Okay.
So the volume's changing all the time. I didn't like it at first, but then once you got used to it, it was pretty good. Sometimes they actually tell you some cool things about the show. Other times they're just joking. They're just like making jokes. Like I think at the end of episode one, one of the guys that's talking about it, they're like, "What was your favorite part of the episode?" And he's like, "Making fun of the villains I didn't know anything about because he had nothing to say." He's like, "I don't know who this is," but anyways, my point on it is so Infiltrator, which like I said, is like six. The sixth episode, the title is Infiltrator. They lead you in the direction in that episode that there is it's about those nanobots or whatever that are supposed to infiltrate things. So that they're trying to tell you that that's the title. But then they also tell you that there is possibly a spy within the Justice League in Young Justice. Right. But that entire thing, that whole episode opens up with Speedy. The first shot you get is him coming in to save that scientist that invented those bots. So Infiltrator, the first person you see in the episode called Infiltrator, is the actual, who turns out to be the actual Infiltrator in Young Justice, which I thought was pretty cool. And they never mentioned that in any of the... behind the scenes people. So I thought that was too bad. I was waiting for that through the whole episode for them to say that.
Right.
But they didn't.
Yeah, so I guess I'm not going to wait for those. I'm just going to continue watching.
Yeah, just continue
trying
watching.
Trying to get through season one and two because, you know, I want to get that done before season three comes on. And, you know, I also got it, and I know we tweeted this out, but I was able to get the DC Universe working on my Fire Stick.
Yeah.
At the store. So I've been deep diving on nine seasons of the Super Friends. And, boy, that takes you back.
Oh, and, yeah.
Some of those early episodes of the Super Friends with Wendy and Marvin, man, they're bad. But
yeah,
they're over
those.
They're so bad they're good. It's like there was one scene in one episode where you had Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Batman and Robin all standing, and they're just basically standing in a cabin looking out, and something jumps out in front of them, and like in order, they go, "Great Scott, Great Neptune, Great Artemis, Holy Moly," and it's like, does everybody have to say something about what just jumped out in front of them? But it's like, and they all have their little catchphrase.
But they couldn't do it all at once. Over. They had to go in order.
Right, they went in order, right? It was like, I was like, just let's go down the line and we'll all say our catchphrase.
Yeah.
And
there's no dead air. Meanwhile, luckily, they all knew exactly
meanwhile, whatever's
when to
happening
say it.
In front of us, yeah, is just, you know, going to start destroying stuff because we have to have our exposition about what our catchphrase is. So it just cracked me up. Like, I literally started laughing.
Yeah, that was fun. What was that? 70s? Late, early
like,
80s?
Yeah, late 70s. Was like the first season of that show, and it's crazy. It's a lot of fun though. I'm really enjoying it. The more I watch of this DC universe, some of this stuff it's just great. Great to watch. It's, so
how are you doing with DC Daily? You watching it every day?
No, I'm still not watching it every day. I have made a habit 3 weeks in a row. I've watched the Monday episode to, make sure I get the Titans talk.
Right.
And I think that's the only one I've watched this week. And I'm catching it once or twice a week, but I'm still not watching it every day.
Well, I'll tell you, you've always said, like, you were more DC growing up. You liked Batman.
Right.
I like Batman as well. I like Superman. But if anybody ever made me pick, I'd always lean towards Marvel.
Right.
And this is probably the first time in my life where this whole entire DC app has made me, like, I'm starting to look at Marvel like, what are they doing here? They need to pick up the ball here because this is occupying a lot of my time and I'm enjoying it. It's like you said, it's like you're putting on Super Friends, you're checking out all this different stuff. When I go over to my TV now, I hit my Apple remote it turns everything on at once and just boom, go right to the DC app and see, all right, I want to catch up on DC Daily. I want to watch this.
Right.
I want to whatever. There's only more to come. It's pretty limited
it's
right
stopping.
Now. So what's it going to be like 6 months from now? And, Young Justice is going to be coming out right when Titans is done. So not really an overlap in shows there. The whole app will have just one main show. But even the Young Justice is only going to run till the end of January. So I'm thinking, Doom Patrol should be shortly after that?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen any release date for Doom Patrol yet. But I know have filmed and, you know, have been producing it for a while. So
yeah.
I have to imagine that it's not too far off. I don't know that they'll necessarily have them always running back to back to back because they don't have that many shows lined up yet that are going to be ready, but I can't imagine that it'll be too long between the end of Young Justice before we get Doom Patrol. And for instance, I know they're still just casting on Swamp Thing, so
right.
We're a good ways away, I think, from actually having that. I wouldn't expect to see it till mid to late 2019.
Yeah, but that'd be a shame that if at the end of January we're out of, like, original content.
It would be a shame, but I don't know. I can't. Well, they'll have Doom Patrol. Like, let's say we get Doom Patrol in early February, and just guessing.
That's what I mean.
You know, it'll run for 3 months.
Right.
So February, March, April, and then, you know, we may have. I think that's a little soon for Swamp Thing, though.
Yeah, Young
I don't
Justice,
know, but
the second half of Young Justice comes out in June. I was listening to when I was editing a podcast last week. I said
you said
January
yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, first half comes out in January, second half comes out in January. I meant to say June, but
okay. Well, that would make sense because then we could go say from April,
right?
You know, take off May and then be back in June. And then let's say that runs another month or so. You know, then we could be in July, August, and we might be in range for Swamp Thing then. And then that would kind of run us right into October again, which is probably when we'll get season two of Titans. So, you know, we're just guessing the timeline, but it sort of makes sense
Yeah,
on the way that could go.
So.
And then eventually we'll have Stargirl in there too, and
yep.
I'm sure they're going to continue with other projects beyond that. So we could get to a point where we are actually overlapping or going right from one to the other. But this year might not be quite as smooth, you know, for that.
Right. So, yeah. But I'm really...
Look at us talking like we know stuff, you know.
We're just making it up.
Well, right. It's easy to know stuff when nobody can really check you.
Yeah, we're hypothesizing.
Right.
So, did you... Last week you asked me about Arrow, staying in the DC universe here. Did you see this week's?
I did.
Okay.
I was a little disappointed.
First question. Did Stephen Amell really get cut on the top of his head? Because that cut on the top, I can't remember. Is it on his right? I think it's on the top of his right side of his head. It's been there all season. And usually in these comic book shows, they get cut. And, by the next week, they're fine because they were fake. And then he's got a good, gash on the top of his head that has just never gone away.
He might have.
Yeah. I'm like...
Heck, it might have always been there under his hair, and we just never knew it. You know?
Yeah. Why were you disappointed this week?
Well, not to be too spoilerific, but I thought we were done with Diaz, and apparently we're not, and I'm done with him. I really don't like him as a character, so...
What, you don't like that voice?
No, I do not.
I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, but it's... It's the Arrowverse.
Well, no, since it's been in the previews.
Right,
so
that's what I mean.
Anybody that's watching the show has seen the previews and knows he's still around, but I kind of thought we were done with him, and I was a little happy about that.
But his buddy there that in prison that ended up escaping?
Yeah.
That's the guy that I was talking about last week that you're like, oh, you think he's, all along you knew he was – it's almost like he's going to turn out to be the mastermind of the whole thing.
Yeah, well, he's definitely going to... We haven't seen the last of him for sure.
No.
He's definitely going to come back in the end. That being said, I thought there was some great stuff that happened in this episode, and I know we don't want to talk spoilers or anything, but we do kind of get to find out who the other Green Arrow is, and not quite who I thought it was, but it's still going to make for an interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I had it's not who I thought it was either, but yeah, that will be interesting. The whole, you know, time jump thing that they're doing now, where they're going into the future instead, you know, like the first five seasons they did flashbacks, now they're doing flash forwards.
Right.
They're entertaining, but. You wonder how it's gonna. They did a great job with wrapping everything up last time. I thought that was, you know, I know they had some ups and downs as far as seasons go from 1 through 5, but when you watch 1 through 5 and you see how they tied in the, you know, at the very end of season 5, how they tied that all into the first episode, and they used footage back and forth. I thought that was really creative. I'm hoping they do the same thing here.
Yeah.
I trust that they know what they're doing. I just don't see it yet.
Well, I do too, but I don't think they have 5 more seasons to bring it all to bear, so
no.
I don't know how quickly we're going to move from this season's current timeline towards the future timeline.
Well, what about...
Even though there has to be, there's inherently at least 8 years or so built into that, because, you know, William is a you know, I don't know, a teenager or early teens in the present day.
I was going to say he's like 10 years in the future.
Well, he might be, yeah. He might only be 10 or 11, and you've got at least a 19, 20-year-old William in the future. So, you know, there's a lot of years that happen in between, but I don't know how long it's going to take us to get there.
Right. Do you think this show could survive without Stephen Amell?
I don't think it could.
Like, could you have a Green Arrow without Oliver Queen?
No, I mean, I guess and they've not really gone this way in the comics. I mean, there's always been Ollie.
Right.
You know, it's never been, say, his son, for instance. But, you know, I could see them trying to work towards you know, having William become the next Green Arrow. But I don't know why the show would need to continue that way. I don't think Stephen Amell is in any hurry to get out. So if they want Arrow to continue, I don't know why they would continue with anybody else but him.
Right.
If he was looking to get out and wanted to be done and they still thought the show could go forward, maybe they could, you know, maybe they could explore that. But I don't think that's the case. For me, you know, every time I see him on any kind of social media or anywhere, I mean, he loves the part and is in no hurry to stop. So,
well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I heard him on that podcast. I think I told you about it before, that Inside of Me podcast. Mm-hmm. And I know he's open to another season, but they're discussing it. He just wants to make sure that it's, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to commit yet. So,
well, I think that's more due to story direction than him necessarily wanting to do it or not do it. You know, it has to be where you get to at this point in season 7.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, the story has to make sense. If you don't have anything else to say,
right,
then don't just keep going on for the sake of going on. And we have kind of both speculated that this might be the end, even though we don't know for sure.
Right.
But I think either way, I don't think Arrow goes on without him, because there's enough shows to jump in and take its place. You know, we've got Batwoman coming sometime at the end of next season or mid-season next year. So that would be the show that could jump in where Arrow, you know, fill the void with Arrow leaving, if it does leave. And I'm sure, you know, I know Greg Berlanti got a mega deal with the CW to keep producing new shows, and I know a chunk of them will end up on DC Universe, but I have to think that one or two of them will wind up on CW also. So
yep.
I think you know, this could be the end for Arrow. Like I said, we don't really know, but I don't see it going on without Stephen Amell.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wanted to ask. I'm like, I didn't think they'd ever done anything like that in the comics, but
no, as far as I know, I mean, there's been other there's obviously been other Arrow characters, but as far as I can ever remember, right, Green Arrow has always been Ollie. So, I don't think they would, like I said, I don't think it would go on without him. Not that they can't diverge, because the TV doesn't always follow exactly what the comics do, but
right. Well, they do in some way.
I don't find
kind of.
Yeah,
it seems like
I don't find William compelling enough to take over as Arrow.
No, not right now.
Yeah, so we'll see.
So
if anything, we've got another Green Arrow now. I mean, we've already got one. So I guess if you didn't have Stephen Amell, you'd continue on with the unnamed female character,
right?
Yeah, you know, but I don't know. We'd have to see.
So. Did you see?
Like, I don't put anything past the CW, because we've got, I don't know, 72 seasons of Supernatural that's gone on. So they do stick with things that work.
Yeah,
so.
And that's why I'm like, if they pick up another season, I'll be excited for that, because I like what they do. So
right,
I mean, nothing wrong with that.
And then I guess let me ask you a question: if Green Arrow, or if Arrow goes off the air, is it still the Arrowverse?
I asked you that a while ago.
Or what is it? Did you?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I think
but
I might have asked you that when I was down there.
I guess it's rattling around in my head,
yeah,
from somewhere.
Like,
so.
Yeah, I think it'll always be the Arrowverse. It'll have to be, because it's the first one that started it.
Right.
You know, it's like, what are you gonna call it, the Flashverse after that?
The Flashverse, yeah. Then it'll change to the Legendsverse. And then,
no,
you know.
I don't think Legends is going to last as long.
I don't think it will either. Legends is one of those shows that, honestly, I just kind of watch it more out of habit. And it's fun, and it's definitely the quirkiest show out of the bunch. But it's the one that really doesn't seem to tie in very much to the rest of them.
Well, it ties in the most, because it's actually like a you know, a tossed salad of all the characters from the other shows.
Right. It's where all the other characters go to die. It's like the Island of Misfit Toys.
But that's the thing.
When the other shows are done with them, they throw them over to the... Like I said, I like it, too. It's quirky and it's fun, but it's the one that if I missed it or if it went away, I wouldn't miss it very much.
It just so happens to be the one that's not in the crossover this year.
Right.
So...
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah. That's going to be fun starting Sunday night.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I think we'll...
Yeah, we've had that little stinger at the end of all the episodes this week.
Yep.
Which is cool. I don't know if you recognized all the helmets and all
the
stuff.
Yes, I was going to say that to you, too.
There.
Yeah,
there's
all
quite
the
a few
helmets.
Of them, yeah.
I saw
you had
Hawkman.
Dr. Fate. Yep. Yeah, you had Hawkman. It looked like you had a Green Lantern that was down.
Yep.
So, yeah, it looked really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So that'll be fun next week because that'll all be wrapped up by the time we do our podcast next week.
Yeah, it's only three nights. So
yeah, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, so we have pretty much that next week. Then on Thursday, next week starts off good next week. Sunday, we have that. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, we have that. Thursday, what am I doing Thursday? I think I'm seeing Into the Spider-Verse.
Right.
Thursday. Saturday, Aquaman. And then...
Oh, that's right, because you got that early Aquaman.
I got the early... And then the following weekend, I'll see Aquaman again, and I'll probably see Bumblebee.
Oh, yeah.
That weekend as well. But I think I'm going to see Aquaman again on opening night on that Thursday night again. So that's it's a really fun couple of weeks coming up.
What?
And then this
Christmas. The most important thing. The most important thing is Wednesday night because you get to record this podcast.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah. That's
Don't forget
that's a given. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see they're making a Blue Beetle?
Yeah, I did. I actually was going to talk about that. A little bit in the speculator roundup.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I did. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and obviously Craig Berlanti going to be good.
Yep.
So.
And Marvel dropped another announcement yesterday, too.
Which one was that?
Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Marvel's announced a Shang-Chi movie. Coming out, I don't know, who knows when, 2020 or something, but
yeah,
that looks very. That's a great character, and we're kind of in a lack of kung fu type movies these days. So,
I'm not familiar with that character, but that doesn't.
He's
mean
Iron Fist before Iron Fist was Iron Fist, you know.
Oh, really?
Shang-Chi
is he a version
out
of Iron Fist? Because there's more than one.
I think Shang-Chi came out first, but he's just basically he's a no power. You know, he's just a martial artist. He had his comic came out in the 70s. You know, back when we had Kung Fu on TV and all the Bruce Lee and there was a lot of Kung Fu and karate movies happening at the time, and Marvel of course had to get in on it with their character. So. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to it. It's obviously an Asian-led film, with an Asian character. We haven't really had a superhero movie with an Asian-led character, so I think that's going to be really cool. Bouncing back to Blue Beetle, Jaime Reyes, we'll get our first Hispanic or Latino-led movie
character,
for superheroes, so. So it's looks really good. I'm excited for both of those.
Yeah. Yeah, that Marvel, I like that they're bringing out stuff that, like I said, I'm not really familiar with because that's where the fun is, and all of a sudden that's going to be a big hit. And everybody will be like, "Oh, that was my favorite character," or something. It's I got into that on Twitter talking about people saying like Aquaman is going to stink or this and that. And I said, I was like, well, be careful. Cause there was a time when they were making Iron Man and why are they making that movie? Cause he wasn't that popular at the time.
Right.
And then they make a great movie out of the character and now he's like one of the most popular characters in the Marvel Universe. Right. And I'm hoping that that's what happens with Aquaman, because a year ago, well, up until a year ago, when we were kids, Aquaman was the joke. It was like, yeah, what good is he? They're on land.
Well, and watching those early seasons of the Super Friends,
yeah,
I can see why.
It's like everywhere, and the Super Friends was a joke, because it was like, okay, Wonder Woman, take Aquaman with you. And right. Like, he'd get in the jet, and there's poor Aquaman just sitting there flying around in an invisible jet, because he can't do anything out of the water, according to that one.
According to that, yeah.
Yeah, but he was like the running joke, but now it's... Just off of their press alone for this movie, they've turned the view of him around. Now, hopefully the movie just, you know, slams it home and everybody's all of a sudden huge Aquaman fans and, you know.
Well, let's hope. Like
he
said,
turns into the Iron Man of
It's DC tracking Wars. Very well, so, you know, it looks like a lot of people are going to go see it. So, and it looks good. You know, like I said, I've avoided the last... as many TV spots and trailers as things as I can, but...
I actually saw a trailer today. I didn't watch it. Somebody tweeted out, oh, this clip from... I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm done.
I don't want to see any more. I haven't watched the new Captain Marvel trailer.
That's good.
I know, but I don't want to watch it.
Really good.
Because I like to be as surprised as I can when I go into these things. But yeah, you know, going back to what you were saying...
Well, they answered the question on why to hit an old lady.
Well, I already knew the answer to that. Because
I know. So did I.
It's like, did anybody not know?
Well,
it's
Twitter went nuts.
Twitter's Twitter.
Why'd she hit an old lady? Well, because she was acting up. What do you mean?
According to Twitter, we can't watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special anymore, and we can't hit old ladies on trains. And, you know,
well.
I don't get my – I try not to get my news from Twitter.
Try not to hit old ladies on trains either.
Right. I guess I didn't need Twitter to tell me that was wrong, but...
Right.
But, you know, going back to what I was saying, yeah, Marvel's Phase 4 looks pretty different from, you know, what we've had in the past. You know, we've got the Eternals movie, we've got Shang-Chi, the Master of Kung Fu. You know, it's going to look a lot different than the way it has, and that's awesome. I can't wait to see what else they've got up their sleeves for us.
Yeah, I think Captain Marvel's going to be the new Nick Fury / Iron Man. She's going to be in charge.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I think she already is in charge. I said that from watching the trailer. I don't know if you know more from the comic books or if this is something they're just doing in the movies, but it really feels like she's in charge. She's telling Fury what to do. And right. I said this briefly on Twitter, but I think by the time the end of Captain Marvel, everybody's like, why hasn't she been around? I think Nick Fury knows all along that Thanos has been coming and this war has been coming. He caught a glimpse of it through one reason or another, through time travel. He knew back in the 90s that this was going to happen. So he made a plan with Captain Marvel. It's like, all right, I'll get the Avengers together. I'll form that, and I'll meet you in, you know, 2019, and we'll do this. Or when, you know what I mean? And I just think when he hit send on that pager, his frustration was, oh, crap, I'm one of the ones that's going away.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where he knew that was, I think he knew that was going to happen.
And, well, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. You know, obviously we'll see more through the movie. I mean, in the comics, she's held different levels of leadership positions with different teams over the years. But she's definitely a character that's used to calling the shots and being in charge.
Yeah.
So I don't know where she'll be in kind of like the S.H.I.E.L.D. hierarchy. But, you know, like I said, she's definitely a character. She's led Alpha Flight and the Avengers, I think, at one point. So, I mean, she's definitely a character that's... You know, she's got a military background, and she's used to being in charge, so.
All right. We got a lot to get to because we're going to do Titans today, so. You want to get to the comic books?
Yeah, sure.
All right. What do we got this week?
Yeah, so, yeah, well, you know, you threw me because I was waiting for you to ask me how you were going to spend your money, and you didn't set me up like you usually do.
Oh,
so
sorry.
That's why we had that dead air for a few minutes, dear
now
listeners.
That you had to just say that. I was going to cut that out because I was using the dead air to put the music in. Okay. And now everybody knows. See, you're just supposed to go on.
Hey, it's the magic of podcasting. Yeah. We could still do all of that, and nobody will know.
Okay, so, let's do this again then. All righty then. All right. So how am I going to spend my money this week?
All right. So for this week's speculator roundup, things are actually pretty quiet on the speculator front this week with the new comics. We did have some really nice looking DC variants. We had a Batman variant by Francesco Mattina. We had the Martian Manhunter number one came out. It had a really cool Joshua Middleton variant. And
is that the one that you sent me?
I did not send you Martian Manhunter. I believe I sent you Green Lantern, Batman, and Nightwing.
Me a Martian Manhunter one.
Well, that was just the regular cover. That was because I was going to mention it later. Like I said, the Nightwing cover by Yasmin Putri.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Really great looking covers, but, you know, I think, like I said, I've been saying it for a couple weeks now, and we may have to stop just including these as speculator books, because the further we get down the line with these, the more retailers are ordering to demand, and so they're not hitting the higher prices on the market as much as they were, because the supply is there. You know, the stores are ordering them, and they're not as hard to find. At this point, I am sold out of Batman and Martian Manhunter, actually, but I do have a couple of the Nightwing left. And the other big one that I didn't mention or send you a picture of was the Suicide Squad. Not Suicide Squad, the Deathstroke variant, which was also Mattina. And that one did sell out as well. So, I mean, they are still selling out, but they're not to the point where, you know, I had them throughout most of the day. You know, almost everybody that wanted to get their hands on one was able to. And, you know, it wasn't like they were the first few weeks. So, like I said, we might have to stop talking about these, but I think it's fun just because they're still good covers.
Yeah, I still like to talk about the covers. I'm not worried about the value and stuff like that. Me personally, I know some people are, but like this Nightwing one is awesome.
It's a really great cover.
It's
probably the best one. Well, actually, the one that I didn't send you a picture of, unfortunately, was the Deathstroke, was actually probably the best looking cover this week. But the Batman was also pretty strong, and that Green Lantern cover was pretty strong too. I really like what DC is doing with the quote unquote virgin variants. You know, you don't have all the trade dress and everything getting in the way, and you've really got some nice covers. So, hands off to them for continuing to do that. And then we had several new number one comics that came out from Image this week. First one is called Die. Next one is Prodigy. We had Self-Made, and we had Freeze. Same thing. None of these are really lighting up the speculator market, but I am going to talk about Prodigy towards the end with our recommended books. There's still some really good books here, and any new number one issue, like I said before, they may not be necessarily sought after today, but a lot of these independent titles, especially from Image Comics, get optioned for TV shows and movies. In Prodigy is already, you know, optioned for Netflix. So,
really,
who knows what they're going to do? Well, I'll talk about that later. Prodigy was already it was going to be part of Netflix before it even came out, and I'll go into that, like I said, a little bit later on why that is, but. You never know with these things, so it's always a great idea to pick up these number ones. And I like supporting Image Comics personally because they're 100% creator-owned titles, and the creators get all the profits, and, you know, it's all about them. So anytime you can support Image with these comics, it's definitely worthwhile. So I do recommend looking at a couple of these. And like I said, that's it really for the speculator books, for the new books that came out this week. It's been like I said, the last 3 weeks or so, there haven't really been anything super special coming out. But I did want to talk about some of the back issues, especially with the Into the Spider-Verse movie coming out. We did mention this briefly last week, but Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, which is the first appearance of Spider-Gwen, I mean, it is seeing crazy activity right now on eBay and on the aftermarket. The closer we get to this movie, the more people are trying to get their hands on this book. I had a copy that I sold in the store about a year, little over a year ago, maybe a year and a half, for about $125. And it's doubled that now, and it's going up every day, it seems like, the closer we get to the movie. You're looking at $200 to $250 for a nice-looking copy of this book right now. So I know I mentioned it last week, and I'll say it again. If these books are on your radar, I wouldn't wait. I wouldn't wait too much longer before trying to get them, because, you know, again, the movie hasn't even come out yet, and it's already starting to drive the demand up for these books. Right on the heels of that is Ultimate Fallout number 4. This is the first appearance of Miles Morales. Once again, I have sold 3 copies of this book in my store this year in the $20 to $25 range. It's currently selling for $50 to $75, and it's only going to keep going up. So that one's not quite as, it's not quite of a, as bitter of a pill to swallow as Edge of Spider-Verse. $50 to $75 is easier to justify than $200 to $250. But I do see this one climbing well over $100 by the end of the year. So I would grab it now.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people, it's funny, that know that I'm doing this podcast now, ask me about that, about Into the Spider-Verse and comics that are going to go with, that go along with it, and I'm like, that we just started talking about it, but yeah, it's people that I wouldn't expect to be talking about it are talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I think we brought it up a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
Bigger than people thought.
Yeah, it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and early screenings are starting to get reviewed on Twitter and other places, and I haven't heard from anybody that didn't say that this was the best comic book movie they've ever seen.
It's just like a movie, not a best animated movie, best movie.
Yeah, I mean, people are really digging
it's,
on it. So.
I mean, there are a lot of, I mean, you go to the Christopher Nolan Batmans, it's, I mean, are they taking, or are they saying MCU? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, or Marvel movie, but it's, I cannot wait to see this movie because, and the hype is quiet. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but there's, you know what I mean? Like, you know when everybody tells you a movie's awesome and then you go see it and you go, really, didn't live up to the hype? That nobody, right. I haven't heard that. It's just been like, no, this is just a really good movie. It's probably the best. And you're like, but nobody tells you why. Or I haven't heard
that. Well, the thing that you're not seeing is, like, I don't think I have yet to see a TV commercial or anything advertising this movie.
Just the trailers. Yeah.
Right, but
well, you know,
those
you're
are at
on
other
Twitter
movies,
now.
You know.
I don't know if you noticed. I just started seeing it today.
The creator snippets?
Yeah. A lot of people dropping. I got to work on this scene, and you're getting this, and I'm like, whoa, that's a little too close. I want to watch this, you know. I just want to go in and enjoy this movie. But yeah, a lot of the creators or the people that worked on the movie are getting to see. They're putting out what they worked on.
Right.
Which is kind of new.
It looks great, but like I said, I haven't seen the giant marketing machine behind it like we have for, you know, even say, like this is a Sony movie, so I was even seeing commercials for Venom all over the place, and, you know, you see them for, you know, Captain Marvel, and you see all these, the marketing taking place for these movies, and I haven't really seen it for this movie, which comes out in just, like, a week, so, but yet it's still getting great reviews and people are finding it even without all that. So I think once the word gets out when this thing's released, it's going to be a giant movie. And, you know, like I said, from the comic book perspective, those are major. You know, you're going to have Peter Parker, who obviously is a huge character in this movie. But nobody's talking about running out and picking up his first appearance, because I don't have a spare 200 grand laying around, and I don't know anybody that does. But these other characters, you know, it really focuses on Miles, and, you know, he's a relatively unknown character outside of comic books. So I think the ultimate fallout is the one that has the most potential for growth, because something like Edge of Spider-Verse number 2, it's already a $200 book, and, you know, it has doubled in a year, but I don't think the ceiling is, like, I don't think it's got room to double again
right.
anytime soon. But I could see Ultimate Fallout being a $125 to $150 book by, you know, inside of a year. So if you're looking to get the bang for your buck, that's where I'd put my money, is trying to get that book. And, you know, like I said, you're going to still pay a little bit for it, but it's worth it. I think that's the one that's got the most, it's got the highest ceiling right now. And
cool.
That's what I'd try to grab. And then the last one I have is Infinite Crisis number 5. And we talked about this character a second ago, but this is the first appearance of the Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle. So, you know, obviously we had the movie announcement this week. This book has jumped from being a $1 to $2 book to $25 almost overnight. So,
wow.
Yeah, and you know, this is not the first time. We've been doing this a few weeks now, and it seems there's always something every week that's benefiting from these announcements. So,
right.
You know, trying to find these first appearances of these kind of unknown characters and then just sitting on them and waiting for these announcements, that's where it's at. Like, I would start scouring my back issue bins at my local store for all these first appearances of all these characters that are, you know, kind of haven't been announced yet, and just wait for the announcements to roll in, because these movies all make money, and, you know, there's only going to be so many Batman and Superman and Spider-Man movies, you know, before they have to start digging into these alternate characters. So,
well, that's the thing. Course, it's like Blue Beetle is going to be is relatively unknown.
And right, and that's
when
the thing.
Movie comes out, it's like, so like you're saying, it's like if you grab this book now,
right.
You know, by the time that movie comes out, you own the first Blue Beetle book. And
right. Even at $25 right now, I think it's a bargain, because
it's pretty cheap.
You know, who knows? You know, we don't know. We all know what happened with the Black Panther movie this year. And, you know, is this the next one? You know, is this going to be the movie for the Latino community? Is Shang-Chi going to be the movie for the Asian community? And by the way, his first appearance has pretty much doubled in price overnight, too. It was already around $100, and, you know, it just jumped instantly. So, you know, obviously getting these books before the announcements are made, that's the key. And, you know,
well,
it's a gamble.
People
because
might already have that anyways.
Right. And like I said, it's a gamble because we don't know when the next announcement's going to be made and who it's going to be, and that's why it's speculator-driven. But
right.
Like I said, I would try to find some of these characters that are just laying around in kind of obscurity and start picking up these first appearances while you can for $2-3 and, you know, just wait and see what happens. So
What did you have on Hawkeye and Deadpool there?
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up, but since you brought it up.
Well, I have that one, so.
Okay, so Hawkeye versus Deadpool number 0. This is the first time I've heard of this, but some people now are saying that there's cameo appearances of Spider-Gwen in the Jane Foster Thor in this book, which would make that technically the first appearance of Spider-Gwen. I mean, either way, whether that's a true assessment or not, the book is seeing some movement because of it. You know, it's already going for about $30, so. This is the first time I've ever heard of that being mentioned as her first appearance, so I don't know if that's going to become an official thing or not, but, you know, it might be worth trying to find that. There's movement in the book.
Whether it's a reality or not, it's,
right.
You know.
Well, and that's the whole thing.
Perception is reality.
Hey, with speculator books, you know, the comics god give and the comics gods take it away, so.
Yep.
It could go down tomorrow once people realize that, hey, that's not really a thing. But but today it is. So if you can find it, grab it.
Cool.
All right. So that's the speculator portion. We're going to move on to our final order cutoff. books for this coming Monday. As usual, you know, DC, every DC comic mainstream title has a variant cover that's done in that Virgin Art style. So the ones that are coming up this week are Batman number 62. That's a Frank Miller variant cover. Those that have followed Batman at all know Frank Miller has a long history with the character.
And never heard of him.
Yeah, yeah. Who's this guy, Frank Miller? I don't know. Dark Knight, Sin City, 300. I don't know.
Yeah.
but he's doing the variant cover for Batman 62. We've got Deathstroke 39. Dave Johnson's doing the variant cover for that. Green Arrow number 48. Neil Adams. Again, Neil Adams is a very well-known artist, been drawing comics since the 70s, really well-known for doing the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series back in the late 70s. So he's done some covers for Green Arrow earlier in the series, and he's coming back to do this one. You've got Green Lantern number 3 by Jay Lee, Harley Quinn 57, Julian Tedesco, Justice League 15 by Will Conrad, Martian Manhunter number 2 by Josh Middleton. This would be the one I think would be have the most opportunity to be a speculator book, just because of the artist, Josh Middleton. Again, if you've listened to any of our episodes, you've heard his name on pretty much every one of them. He's always doing these variant covers. And Nightwing number 46 by Otto Schmidt. So, again, those are all the DC variants if you want to go into your store and order those this weekend. And then DC is getting one new series on next week's Final Order Cutoff, and that's Young Justice number 1. Coincidentally, that thing will probably hit in about 3 weeks, which is right after the launch. Yeah, right after the launch or right before the launch of Young Justice Season 3. So seems like somebody knew what they were doing with the scheduling on that. There's a bunch of covers for this. There's, of course, the regular cover. There's a blank cover. And then each character gets their own cover. So there'll be a Robin cover, Impulse, Wonder Girl. I'll get covers for this. After I put these notes out this afternoon, we got sent the advanced copy of Young Justice number 1. So I did read it before we started today.
Oh boy.
It looks like it's going to be a fun book. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis, and this is the first book in the DC Wonder imprint that we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, for kids.
Yeah, it's made for young readers, but I'll be honest with you, it didn't come off that way when I was reading it. It seemed still fairly adult-oriented, so I don't know that if I didn't know that, I wouldn't have pegged this for being a part of the Wonder series at all, but it is part of that line that is aimed for younger readers. So after getting a chance to read it, I do recommend it. I'd get into your store and order that. They should be able to show you all of the covers. Every character cover is available to see right now. So pick your favorite character, get the cover for that. It looks like it's going to be a fun series. And then jumping over to Marvel, we've got a couple of variant covers there. We've got Avengers number 12 has the 80th anniversary Phil Noto variant. Spider-Gwen number 4 is going to have their Guardians of the Galaxy variant. Thor number 9 also has the 80th anniversary variant. I guess I should have grouped these together, because then X-23 number 8 has the Guardians of the Galaxy variant. So those are the four open-to-order Marvel comics. I went alphabetical. I should have grouped them by the type of variant, I guess. But there are three new series that are coming out from Marvel on next week's order. First one is Captain Marvel, number 1. You know, again, launching a new series right before, or, you know, shortly before her movie comes out. We've got Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, number 1. So yet another Spider-Man title, like we needed another one. But
yeah.
But that's coming out. And then Star Wars Age of Republic, Jango Fett, number 1. Now, that's not actually a series. It's actually just a one-shot special. But, you know, of course, Boba Fett, Jango Fett, they're all very popular characters. So each one of these has multiple cover options that you can order. I didn't go to the trouble of listing them all, because in Marvel fashion, not every one of them are open to order. Some of them are ratio variants. So if you're interested, just go into your store, get them to pull up the list, and they can show you the ones they have available and the ones they'll be able to fill for you. And that's it for Marvel. Jumping on down to Dynamite Comics, we have a new series, two new series, actually. We've got a mini-series with Barbarella, who, you know, if you remember, was the old B-movie character Jane Fonda.
Yep.
And Deja Thoris, number one. So they're crossing over in a mini-series. Again, Dynamite Comics, with every series, have about 10 different variant covers for every book they do. So same thing here. I didn't list all the artists and all the different covers. Just go into your store and get them to show you them. Most of these... The Dynamite Comics always have like a cosplay cover available where they're actually real people, you know, in cosplay photographed onto the covers. And some of those are, you know, usually pretty good covers. And then you got Turok number one is launching from Dynamite Comics too. Turok was an old Gold Key character that then went to Valiant in the 90s, and now it's coming back from Dynamite Comics. So it's a character that's been around for quite a long time. And that's coming back to us. And then the last one is from Zenoscope. We've got Grim Fairy Tales, number 25. Again, I only mention this because they have also 8 to 10 variant covers on all of these books done by some pretty popular artists. The Zenoscope covers are always really great covers. So if you're interested in any of those, you know, you want to get your store to pull them up for you as well, and they can show you what they have available. And that is our final order cutoff for this week. I did not mention it last week, but I will this week. One more time. DJ's already laughing, but this is the retailer in me speaking. If you go into your store and you ask them to order these books for you, and they are kind enough to do it without asking you for a deposit, please make sure you go in and pick your books up when they come in. It's the right thing to do. So...
And then and that's John's PSA for the week.
That's right. The more you know. Put that theme. Put in that theme music in post, DJ.
Yeah.
So, and then we're going to finish it off like we usually do with our recommended reading. I had two down here that I wanted to talk about before. But before I do that, because DJ has seen those notes already, but he hasn't seen this part. I also read Shazam number one and Martian Manhunter number one this week, both from DC Comics. I can't recommend both of them highly enough.
Shazam's not gonna
go
good.
I'm not going to go into the details on them necessarily because I don't want to go too long. And we may talk about Shazam in a future episode because I actually thought it was very, very good. It was a lot of fun. I really liked it. Again, not to get into any spoilers, but there is a great running gag through the whole book because none of them know what to call themselves because they can't use the name Captain Marvel. So,
right.
You know, none of the characters know what their names are because you can't have Mary Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. and
right.
all these names if you don't have Captain Marvel. So I don't think it's going to be Mary Shazam and Shazam Jr. So I just thought that was a lot of fun that they kind of poked fun at themselves through there. And but yeah, it was a great series. For anybody that read the short stories through the New 52 run of Justice League, the first 6 issues I think had a backup story with Shazam, and this picks right up where that left off. So if you like that run at all. It's been a long time since Shazam has had his own book, and I'm really looking forward to it because, like I said, it was a lot of fun.
What's the frequency on that book?
As monthly, as far as I know.
Is it just monthly?
It should just be a monthly title. And it is an ongoing, so I think it'll be with us for a while. And I hope they keep the theme of it all the way through because it was a lot of fun. And Martian Manhunter was a very different take on the character than anything we've seen before. It was written by Steve Orlando. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it at all.
I looked at it. I didn't have a chance to like read it, but I looked at it.
I didn't love the art.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
You know what that actually, you know what's funny? That gets back to the dance, the impressionist dance.
Right.
That's kind of what the art was like. It was a cross between impressionist art and like kindergarten watercolors.
Right.
And
yeah.
I get what they were doing. And you know what I did like about the art, though? As much as I'm not into that kind of art, it still conveyed the emotion that they were trying to get out of the characters.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then when the art switched up, it worked. I prefer art. I prefer my comics to be like, I mean, Batman Damned was like a realistic kind of art. I really like that. But I like the traditional, like, your traditional comic art. What they did, I see what they're doing. It's a little different. Not a little different. It was a lot different.
Right.
But I wasn't crazy about it, but it was still well done. It's just not my taste.
Right. And it's not mine either. And, you know, again, I'm never one to be negative or disparage any artist because, you know, it's all a matter of
the right podcast.
Right. Well, it's all a matter of personal taste. And you know what? He's doing something that I'm not doing. So who am I to judge? But it wasn't necessarily my taste, but the story by Steve Orlando, like I said, it's a take on the Martian Manhunter that I've never seen before, and I'm very interested to see where it goes. So I recommend both of those books pretty highly from DC. And then to get into the other two that I actually did plan on talking about, we had Prodigy number one, which I mentioned earlier from Image Comics. And the reason why I mentioned Netflix is because this is done by Mark Millar. And Mark Millar cut a deal with Netflix earlier this year to produce a bunch of comics and television for them. So the first project he did launched about 6 months ago, and that was Magic Order number one. And then the second project under kind of like the Netflix banner is Prodigy number one. This was a really, really fun book. So again, it was written by Mark Millar. And the art was done by Raphael Albuquerque. It's about a character called Edison Crane, and he's basically the smartest man in the world. And he's bored. You know, what do you do if you're the smartest man in the world and nothing is entertaining to you? So, you know, he kind of goes around and he makes his living by solving all the problems of the governments around the world. And, you know, basically splitting his time between doing that and doing stunts and tricks and dares basically from people that are contacting him on social media saying, well, you know, jump over the Grand Canyon with your car and have it be on fire and, you know, just this crazy stuff. And like I said, it's just a guy that's got all the money in the world because he's a super genius and doesn't have anything to do. So it was a lot of fun.
I can relate.
Yeah, right. You know, because that's just what I do. So,
oh wait, I'm the exact opposite.
Yeah, right. I have no money, and I'm very stupid. So, but there's a really great line in there. You know, again, and it's not much of a spoiler, I don't think. But you know, his dad's giving him grief when he's about 18 years old, telling him he's wasting his life reading all these books and trying to get smarter, and flips him a dollar coin and flips it to him. He says, there's your inheritance. And he catches it and says, I'll turn it into a billion by the end of the year. So it was just really
nice.
Cool. Yeah. So, you know, again, and Mark Millar, you know, he's known, you know, he invented, or he's the creator of Kick-Ass, which, you know, is
great.
Very popular movies.
Yep.
and comics. And so he's known for his work, and he's a very popular writer, and obviously, you know, has a big following. Otherwise, Netflix wouldn't have given them this, like, billion-dollar deal to create content for them. So Prodigy number one, it's a great read, and it looks like it's going to be a fun TV series. And not to go back into something that came out 6 months ago, but if you can get your hand on Magic Order, that's a great series, too. And then moving on into from Boom Studios, we've got Wizard Beach. And this is the number one out of five issues. It's written by Sean Simon, and the art is done by Connor Nolan. This is another one. It's a kind of a magic user. Obviously, they're wizards, hence the name Wizard Beach, wizards and witches. But you've got, you know, a younger character. His name is Hexley Ragbottom. And, you know, he's trying to learn the ways of how to be a wizard. and he's trying to get his dad to teach him, and his father doesn't really want to have anything to do with it. So Hexley decides he's going to go find his uncle Salazar, who, you know, is quote unquote the most powerful wizard that they've ever had, and he's going to go get him to teach him. And his dad, you know, he doesn't want him to go, but he goes anyways. And so he finds his uncle, called Sally, short for Salazar, and, you know, he's hanging out on Wizard Beach, and all he wants to do is just kind of kick back and relax and be a beach bum. And, you know, Hexley really is disappointed because he expects more and wants to, you know, wants to learn about this, and his uncle doesn't really want to have anything to do with teaching him. So, again, I loved the art in this. It was very quirky, you know, a lot of great colorful pages, and the writing was sharp. It had some funny moments in it, and it looks like it's going to be a good series. There's a lot of, you know, the first issue is done in three chapters, and between each chapter you get kind of like the history of the wizards and witches and how they went about being discovered by everyday people. And
Kind of like Watchmen?
Yeah, and, well, a little bit like Harry Potter in a way. You know, it's set in the quote-unquote real world.
That being wizards.
Yeah, but, I mean, but they're in, like, the real world with real people. It's like everyday modern society. It's not like it's set in the medieval times.
Yeah, I meant,
anything.
Like, how in Watchmen they gave you a little background section.
Yeah, yeah.
You had the Watchmen.
Yeah, similar to that, yeah. You've got kind of like newspaper clippings and articles and things that are happening to explain, you know, what's been going on. But, like I said, I love Boom Studios. I really like a lot of the things they do as well. They put out a lot of fun stuff, and this is another one that looks to be really good. You know, like I said, it's just five issues, so it's not a long-time commitment to get in and read this story. So I'd definitely go in and pick those up. So it's four books this week that I would put on my must-reading list. Martian Manhunter, Shazam, Prodigy, and Wizard Beach. If you pick up those, you should be doing pretty good. And that's it for the comic book roundup this week.
All right, and our big news this week, we have sponsors.
Do tell.
I will tell. All right, so we have sponsors now. We picked up three sponsors.
Nobody's listening, but we got sponsors.
Well, and that's the thing. The sponsors are going to benefit the listeners. Right. So what we've done is we've asked these stores, comic book stores, our sponsors. First is, you guessed it, Arkham Comics and Games.
Oh,
out of,
I'm surprised
Pearland,
you got that guy.
Texas. Yeah, he was the toughest one.
Right. He was the holdout.
he really was. No, and you can find him at ArkhamComicsAndGames.com, all spelled out. The next one is Legends Comics and Games from Littleton, Mass. And you can find them at LegendComicsWithAnX.com. And our last one is Rubber Chicken Comics in Bellingham, Massachusetts. And you can find them at RubberChickenComics.com. So the deal with them is they've all agreed to give a 10% discount to our listeners for any of the comics that we talk about in our comic book roundup. So if you just go into these stores and you say, hey, I heard about, like, say this week it was just, for instance, Prodigy, they'll give you a 10% discount on that comic or any of the other ones that we've listed today. And, of course, they're all in the show notes. So thank you to our sponsors. We're very excited. Hopefully our listeners can take advantage of it.
Yeah, so it's another chance to get a great deal on some great books. So definitely go in and take advantage of it.
All right. You ready for Titans?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready for Titans.
All right, I'm going to wait a few minutes because I know you've been dying for 4 weeks to talk about this. So what else can we talk about? I'm just kidding. All right, let's do Titans.
All right. Well, I think, you know, I guess we want to start spoiler-free, right, on Titans for
yes.
a few minutes.
Yeah,
so, you know, so obviously we've talked about Titans before. A couple of weeks ago we talked about the first four episodes of Titans. And, you know, I don't know how you can talk about the second four episodes without touching at all on the first four episodes. But, you know, once again, I just kind of go back to what I was saying before And this is just shaping up to be such a good series. If you're not watching it and you don't have the DC Universe subscription,
oh my god,
I don't know what you're at this point. I don't know what you're waiting
for. You're not listening to us, which we don't have a lot of listeners, right. So I get that. But if you're listening to us, you have to know that by now,
right? And you know, the biggest thing, and I've been as vocal as anybody about the lack of support for Amazon Fire TV, and you know, we did tweet out a method to get this thing working on your Fire TV, and it's a completely legal workaround, so you don't have to worry about doing anything you shouldn't be doing. But with that being said, now there is no reason for anybody not to be watching this service, because you can watch it on Apple TV, you can watch it on Roku, you can watch it on PC, and now you can watch it on Fire TV. So I'm not going to go through the boring details now. Follow us on Twitter, go through our tweets. I'm sure DJ would be kind enough to retweet it out again on Friday morning when the show comes up, if need be. But like I said, this is just such a good show. You know,
it's so.
Go ahead.
Connor Leslie, who's playing Donna Troy.
Right.
She did an interview. I think. Did you see that?
I don't know
if it was on Monday.
I saw it on DC Daily. It might have been. I think it was Monday.
No,
I think it was Monday, because I think it was before Titans Talk on Monday.
But she literally says this season one is a slow burn.
Right.
She's like, she goes, it's a slow burn. She goes, it's more to introduce these characters, she says. And what I loved about her saying that is the future, they must have so much planned.
Right.
And she knows it. Like, she's almost now, I love the show, and part of, like you said, it's like, so when I watched episode 5 in my, like, after episode 5, I said, I thought 1 through 4 was really good.
Right.
5 just ramped it up, and then 6 did the same thing, and 7 did the same thing. Actually, I thought 7 slowed it back down a little bit, but it just, you don't mind it, because what they're doing with these characters and the way they're developing them, and you and I go back and forth on, like, you know everything about these characters, I don't, and the way I'm learning about them is great. And I think the people that do know stuff about them, like yourself, it seems like even you like what they're doing with the characters.
Well, the one thing I'll say is that I don't know these characters really any more than you do at this point. Like, I know the comic versions of the Teen Titans or Titans, and this show is not that. So one of the things I will say, as much as I love this show, I think it's one of the best shows out there, but with every passing episode, it gets further away from me from the Titans that I know.
And you don't mind
that? I don't mind it, because this is just an alternate version of these characters.
Right.
Because it is not following, and we'll get into this when we start talking spoilers, and if you listen to our last review of Titans, you've already heard this, and there's no secret that this is a violent world that these characters are living in, much more so than anything you see in the comics. So they're making decisions and doing things on this show that these characters would never do, you know, in the comic books. And it bothered me a little bit at first, but once I kind of divorced myself from the comics and just told myself that this is another version of these characters, it doesn't bother me as much as it did before. But what, like I say, once we dig into the...
So they've sucked you in.
Well, they have. And like I said, they've had me from the beginning. Like, I've always liked the show, but I did have a lot of reservations about where they were taking these characters initially, because...
Yeah, you and I talked about it over the summer.
Yeah.
You did. You had a lot, especially... what's her name?
Well, I had reservations with Starfire just from the image, like the images,
yeah,
and the
Starfire.
Look, of course, that we've all seen by now, and we're fairly controversial at the time. But even once the show got started, or we got our first trailer for the show, and you have the big F Batman bomb and things like that, and you know, you kind of knew right away that this was going to be a little bit different. But it did bother me a little bit at first, and I wasn't sure that they were going to get me for the whole ride, just based on the fact that these characters were not acting the way that I thought they should be acting. But, you know, like I said, once I kind of just made up my mind to treat this show as its own entity and not try to, you know, really connect it or marry it to the comic book versions of these characters, I've started to enjoy it a little bit more. But it is definitely a departure from what you're used to if you're a fan of the comics or you've been following these characters for a long time. They've all made decisions and done things that we'll talk about a little bit further that, you know, make them all in some ways a little bit irredeemable. You know, these are not 100% the good guys, I don't think, you know.
Well, I think their intentions
may be good, but...
But they're, you know what I think they're doing is, and it's funny, a few weeks ago, you know, we talked about Stan Lee.
Right.
And one of the things everybody loved about his characters is they had faults.
Right.
And these characters here in Titans have faults. They're learning how to deal with them, or in the case of Starfire, you don't know what she is.
Right.
So she's learning how to deal with herself, whereas, you know, Dick Grayson and Robin is learning how to deal with his demons,
right,
which he's blaming on Batman, when in reality, I don't think you blame Batman. I think, you know, and we'll talk more in spoilers, right, but I think he was this way anyways.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was, Batman didn't do this to him. Batman just gave him an avenue to let it out.
Right. Well, you know, but there's, so, you know, we mentioned their intentions.
That's just one of the characters.
Right. But, you know, we said that, you know, we think their intentions are right, but, you know, there is that age old saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So
good intentions.
You know, you can have good intentions all day long, but actions speak louder than words. So, you know, like I said, I don't know. I think that as the series goes on, they'll all get their kind of redemption arc through the stories that will turn them. Because as we stand right now, they're still not a – they don't consider themselves a team. They're not the Titans. They're just a group of people that are thrown together. But I think, you know, as this thing goes on, we may get it by the end of this season. We may not. But at some point, they will become a team, and, you know, they will consider themselves that. And I think that's when maybe you'll start to see some of the values and some of those things starting to solidify for all these characters. But yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been a bit of a departure, but I still can't wait. You know, like you mentioned, I was pretty excited to talk about this after the episode 4, and by the end of episode 5, I was wishing it was episode 8 so we could talk about it again. And, you know, those are just arbitrary numbers we set for ourselves, because I guess we could have talked about it if we wanted to. We didn't have to wait for episode 8, but we figured that would give us basically three points throughout the season that we could discuss, and that's why
in January. We talk about it at the
right
end. It's same here. It's, I think every episode, by the time episode 8 ended, I was like, oh, crap, I got to wait a week.
Right.
But every episode really kind of ends that way.
Right.
Where you just can't, and we've said this before, I'll be interested to see what it's like for people to hear from people that have binge watched it.
Right.
I'm hearing from, I've seen on Twitter, and I've a couple of interviews I've seen on DC Daily and stuff, people that have binge watched it, you know, they save it up and they're like, it's just so good just to go right through it. And but this week at a time thing, it really plays right into the whole DC universe and then DC Daily, and it just really gets you invested in the characters.
Right.
I think we mentioned this last week and we lost the audio. But it was one of the things we lost audio on, is that the way that they're doing this, like I just said, where they do the interviews and stuff on DC Daily, they really get you behind the scenes and really vet out these characters, and you're only getting one show a week. But by the time the next episode comes in, you've got a lot of behind the scenes notes. You've got interviews with different characters, and it's stuff they're doing to integrate the entire DC universe. And like we compared it last week to the CW Arrowverse, and those characters have been out for 7 years on Arrow, and we don't know half as much as you're not as invested half as much as you are with Titans. It's just such a, I can't think of the term. It's just fun. You're almost like playing along with it. Like, you can't wait for Monday so you can watch the DC Daily.
Right.
And it's very engrossing.
Yeah, like I said, that's part of it for me now. And I didn't start doing it with the first episode. I've only been doing it for about 3 weeks. But you're right. I do look forward to Mondays and watching that DC Daily because I want to see the take of the people that are on the panel. Because each week they've brought up something that I didn't catch while I was watching the show that I thought was something that was interesting. And I like to get that perspective from other people. I don't always agree with everything that they say.
Yeah. Sometimes they miss the. I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
No, that's not what they meant, or that's not how I read it.
Right. Well, because again, they're just four fans also. Like, they don't have any special insight or know anything more than we do either. They're doing the same thing we're doing right now, and they're just sitting there and they're giving their thoughts about what happened. And it's fun to see what other people bring to it that I didn't catch or,
right.
You know, even if,
you know what I like is I always wonder if they've, because they're on DC Daily, and I'm wondering if they have knowledge of other shows, like they've already seen some of the other shows. And I always listen to them to get hints on what's coming.
And I don't know. I don't know if they have or not. It's possible that they have, but it feels very off the cuff to, I mean, I know the questions that they're going to ask are prepared because they're written down on their little note cards, so they know what they're going to ask, but I don't think the answers are rehearsed or come with knowledge of the future. I think it's just them doing what we're doing, and, you know, they might have had time to prepare their answer ahead of time, but I don't know whether they've seen the rest of the series or not.
Yeah. So, you ready to get into spoilers?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do that. So, I looked up, and I don't even know if this is really a spoiler, but I think it's kind of funny that Garfield is the tiger, which is very similar to Garfield, the comic cat.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any relation there.
No, he was named Garfield long before the comic cat was invented.
Yeah.
But I don't know, he wasn't a tiger always in the comics.
No, he's, you know, Beast Boy has always been able to transform into pretty much any animal he wanted.
Anything, yeah.
And, you know, I think we mentioned it, I know we mentioned it when we talked about episode 4, that they did touch on the reason why he is only turning into a tiger at this point. But I still hope they get past that. At some point, I know why they worked it in the story, but the cynic in me just still thinks it's a budgetary thing where, you know, they don't want to have to CGI the transformations between multiple animals, so they just stick with the tiger because that's what they've paid for already. But I would definitely like to see some other animals come into play because, you know, a tiger's not always the right man for the job. You know,
we'll get into that in a minute. But episode 5, my favorite part of episode 5 is when Robin finally shows up.
Right.
But before that, they did a great job of leading you up to that because in that episode, each character really they go out to this barn that I wonder where that came from, like. They just get to show up in a barn. But they go out to this barn, and they each get to demonstrate their powers. And at the end of all of them demonstrating their powers, they look at Robin and go, or at Dick and go, well, we did, they don't know he's Robin at the time. And they're like, okay, we all did ours. Now it's your turn. What can you do? And he's just like, I could keep you alive.
Right.
Let's go.
So what I liked about that is that was actually supposed to be like the Rocky training montage where, you know, they go out to the barn and they're all starting to train together as a team. And they even mentioned that, you know, if they were going to stick together and
we
be
have
alive,
to
they have to train and they learn have to learn how to work together. And then they go to this barn and they don't train at all. Like each one of them, each one of them just demonstrates what they can do and they kind of show off their powers a bit. And then that's it. That's the end of the training session. So I don't know what they got out of that other than the fact that they got to see what they each could do, but they still don't know how to work together.
Starfire clearly needs training because she missed the tractor. Luckily, she hit the broadside of the barn. Actually, it wasn't the broadside. It was the end of it. But she hit the barn. She's like, oh, I need to practice. Well, yeah, that's what you're there for. So you're there to practice. Right.
So I thought that was funny. And then to kind of go back, so then, yeah, they, you know, Dick says, my power is that I can keep you guys alive and doesn't let on that he's Robin. And then you fast forward to a little bit further in the episode and, you know, they all kind of get into a little trouble and, you know, kind of like, you know, the you know what's hitting the fan a little bit. And Dick decides, well, now's the time for me to run off and change into my tights so I can come back and reveal to everybody that I'm Robin and help them. So,
so you know what I noticed about that the second time I was watching it? And this will come up again in the next episode we talk about. But his cape, did he – now, is it a – do you think it's a fashion choice of the show or do you think it's it was Dick not wanting to wear a yellow cape? It was black on the outside with yellow underneath. Did he turn his cape inside out?
No. I mean, the comics have portrayed it that way for quite a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Black on the outside and yellow underneath.
Yeah. There's been different iterations of it because it's been like black and green.
That was more of an ink thing.
There's been iterations where there's been no cape, but now I'm thinking back. Like, did we see that in the earlier episodes being the opposite, or do I just not remember?
I think it was always black with yellow.
Yeah,
underneath.
So I think that's more.
I was just like, huh.
You know, it makes more sense that. What never made sense to me about the Batman and Robin dynamic is that Batman was always very muted with grays and blues and blacks and trying to blend in with the night, and yet you're running around with this kid that's wearing bright yellow and green and red. So, you're not blending into anything. So,
but that comes up in episode 6,
right? But I think
Jason Todd says that.
Right. But I think this iteration, they've tried to go, and I use air quotes, realistic, you know, where it would make more sense for it to be black on the outside, I think, and yellow on the inside. Because I don't believe he would have turned it inside out in that one scene just to be different.
No, but I don't think he did it in that one scene. I mean in the entire show. Yeah. Almost like he left Batman and he's like, well, screw this. I'm not being yellow anymore. And he flipped it over and where's the black on the outside? That's all I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, we're never going to know because by the end of even these four episodes, he's burned the suit.
Right.
So we all know what's coming next and should be shortly. They'll probably end that with this, you know, at the end of the season, I would guess. No?
Yeah, well, I mean, we jumped ahead a little bit to this because this is episode 7. But yeah, so obviously, if you would have asked me at the beginning of the season if we were going to see Nightwing by the end of this season, I would have said no way because I wouldn't think they would have transitioned that quickly. But the way this is going, you know, by the end of episode 7, he's burned. Really, at the end of episode 6, which is the Jason Todd episode, he's talking to the other members of the team on the phone and makes mention that, you know, Robin is gone. You know, basically, Robin doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And then, I'm sorry. That was after he burned the suit. So,
right.
So I guess that was episode 7. But yeah, so in episode 7, you know, you see him burn the suit. And, you know, that's the end of Robin. So we either go through the rest of the season now with Dick just running around in his street clothes, or we get Nightwing here pretty quickly, which I'm excited about, although it's a little quicker than I thought we would get it. But I would have a hard time believing he's going to run through the next four episodes without any kind of costume. So I would think we get Nightwing pretty quickly. And again, I don't want to completely skip over episode 6, and I guess we can go back and talk about that because a lot of cool stuff happened. But, you know, you jump forward to episode 8, and, you know, you get Donna Troy, and they spend some time talking about what's going to become, you know, what Dick's going to become, you know, now that he's not Robin.
He's like, I have to be something. I can't be Robin. Right. This is all in episode 8. I can't be Robin, but I can't just... I just can't be
right. I can't be nothing. He has to be something. So, he can't stop the life. Like, he's gonna, you know, because you start to see, you know, you start the whole show off, the whole season, where he had kind of decided he was gonna leave Robin behind, and he wasn't gonna be anything. He was just gonna be the detective Dick Grayson.
Right.
But, you know, events, and, you know, as they do in comic book world, you know, it's kind of like Al Pacino in The Godfather, you know. Every time I try to get out, they pull me back in. You know, there's no way he can leave that behind. And I think by episode 8, he knows that he can't. You know, it's part of him, and he has to be something. So he doesn't know yet what he's going to be. But, of course, we all know it's Nightwing. So I think it's going to be awesome to see him get there. And, you know, honestly, if he gets that, if we get to see him in the Nightwing costume before the end of this season, what a great kept secret that was, because there's not been one leak of a costume, of the name, nothing. So they've done a fantastic job of keeping that under wraps, if that's the case. But, yeah, only time will tell. I guess we'll be talking in 3 or 4 more weeks about the end of the season and whether that happens. But, you know, again, anybody that's a comic book reader knows who he becomes and kind of knows what's going to happen with that. So,
yeah. So episode 6, though, Jason Todd.
Yeah, so that's awesome. So, yeah, right at the end of episode 5, you know, Dick...
He busts in and saves the day.
He's confronting, I can't remember his name, the doctor there, Mr. Omelette. he's confronting him in his hotel room, I guess, or his penthouse, or wherever he's actually staying.
Yeah,
I guess
it's
a penthouse or an office tower. And he's confronting him, and the guy's just casually saying, "Well, it doesn't matter what I tell you, because in a minute and a half, the kill team's going to be here, and we're all going to be dead." And then, you know, the tear gas bomb or whatever goes off, and Dick gets saved, and you find out that it's Jason Todd who saved the day. And, you know, that kind of ends off episode 5 and brings you into...
Yeah, what did he say? I'm the new new you?
Yeah, I'm
the
new you. And, you know, and he was pretty cool, you know. He jumps in and saves the day. So that ends that episode.
So, yeah,
and we move into...
Pretty cool in episode 6 how he... I don't know if he's telling the truth or not. He seems like he's sketchy.
Well,
in this adaptation of him, he's very sketchy. He meets Batman similar to the comics, where he steals. What was he stealing?
Right,
he's stealing his
wheels. Which is exactly the way it happens in the comics. So that's beat for beat. Yeah, and at the very beginning, you don't have any reason to doubt anything he's saying, but. As the episode goes on and we get to see his character, he's definitely sketchy. And by the end of it, I don't even believe that Batman knows he's there. You know, I kind of think he went off on his own and is doing this, you know, without Batman's knowledge or consent.
Because I was talking to? We were talking about the room? That when he brought him to the safe house and Dick went to access the safe house with his eye, and he got denied.
Right, so that kind of paints Batman as you know, like the jilted lover. You know, he's kind of like
and I don't know if it was you I was talking to or somebody else.
I don't think it was me because I'm not allowed to talk to you about it until we do this.
But they were saying like, no, that's so wrong. Batman would never do that. And I said, I think that's the point. I don't think Batman did that. I don't think Batman changed the codes. I think Jason changed the codes, and he's trying to create more of a separation between Dick and Bruce Wayne.
Well, I could see it either way.
You know what I
could
mean?
See it either way because, you know, again, we're going off the assumption of how we think Batman would act, but it's already kind of been demonstrated to us that these characters are not the comic book characters that we're used to. So, We might be able to say in the comic book Batman wouldn't act that way, but we don't know how Batman acts in this TV show.
Okay, but in this TV show, just going off of this iteration, Batman lets him take a Porsche. He lets him have his suit, his weapons, and Alfred's giving him money. But he can't access a safe house?
Well, I don't know, because...
That doesn't make sense. I think it's more Jason... It makes way more sense, especially the way Jason acts in this entire episode, in that Jason's jealous. Like, I think Batman almost feels like maybe Jason's reading Batman like, oh, he likes Dick more than he likes me. Because maybe, you know, Jason's the new guy, but Bruce Wayne can't stop talking about Dick Grayson. Like, I'm not going to let what happened to Dick happen to you. It'd be like, and Jason's like, look, I need to separate them even more. And he does this little stunt thing. Granted, saves him.
Right.
But it's...
Well, it could be. Who knows?
He's an angry elf.
Right.
And I just think there's something else going on there.
Well, but even in the comic book versions, you know, Batman is known to be somewhat vindictive and, you know, known to kind of, you know, throwing tantrums
Grayson,
when
though,
he doesn't
he?
Get his own way. Well, there's definitely been... There's been times in the comics where they have not got along and seen eye to eye. And, you know, Bruce has a God complex. And, you know, things have to be – it's his way or the highway. And so there is – I can definitely believe that Bruce would change the locks and do those things. Like, I don't know that he necessarily let him keep the costume. I guess, like, how do you take it away from him? He is Robin. You know, you can't tell him, oh, well, you can't be Robin anymore just because you're not going to be with me. But who knows, you know, we may find out
pretty much paid for everything.
Well, yeah, of course, but you know, we may find out that he did know or he didn't. We don't know how much more we'll get of that storyline. So it could go either way, I think. But the other thing I thought was really interesting was the whole situation with the trackers that Bruce basically implanted in both of them. You know, and how they both see it completely differently. You know, Jason sees it as a,
right.
You know, as a big benefit, you know, like, well, Batman will always know where I am. And, you know, that comes into play later on, I guess, when the Joker beats him to death with a lead pipe. If he knew where you were, why didn't he come and save you? But, but you know, Dick views it as a complete invasion of privacy and, you know, but what I thought was interesting about it is, like, when was that implanted that Dick didn't know about it? Because Jason knew, you know, he was very aware that that tracker was implanted in his arm. Dick had no idea. So, you know, did he do it while he was asleep? Did he slip him a Mickey in one of his drinks and put, you know, did he give him a roofie, you know, and put him out? And was there no scar on his arm or anything? It's like, how did he not know that this thing was in his arm to begin with? He wasn't an infant when he got him, so there was no point in time where he would have not known that something was happening. And who knows how long that had even been in there. You know, was it something that Bruce did, you know, when he got him at 8 or 10 years old, or was it something that happened later on? You know, we don't really know, but, you know, I thought that was just very interesting the way the two of those characters both looked completely differently at how that was. You know, Dick sees it as completely manipulating and, you know, not in his best interest at all, to the point where, you know, he's talking on the phone to Corey later on and just casually digging this thing out of his arm.
Oh my God.
It's like, you know, and cracking jokes on the phone like it's no big deal. Meanwhile, I'm digging through my skin with a, you know, with a scalpel or a razor that's
with a razor blade
that's not sharp and
pulling out a tracker.
Right. But really cool. You know, it really gives you some insights into the characters, the character of Batman, who we may never see in this show, but we're starting to get to know a little bit better.
That's what they said at the end of episode 5.
Right.
And when Carr and Rachel are like, so you're Robin. Yeah. And they're like, you know Batman? Yeah. Are we going to get to meet Batman?
Nope.
Oh, no. He said, are we going to get to see Batman? No, you're not going to see Batman.
Right. So I don't know if that was telling us or if it was just telling him.
I hope we get to see him. Maybe they're not going to get to see him, but I hope we get to see him at some point. But I like they showed the Batcave.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's
episode 6. Batcave. Batmobile from... Looks like it's the Batmobile from the animated series.
Yeah.
That long, drawn-out nose.
Yeah, it looks really cool. So, we're starting to see glimpses into the cave and into the Batmobile and these things.
Yeah.
But,
What's his friend there that they went to see it from the circus?
Yeah.
That they met at the club. And then when he finds out that he's Robin and he's still... that the way that, like... your mind works, like the ignorance, like it couldn't be that, you know, he's trying to tell Dick that, oh, the best thing that ever happened to you is you ended up with Bruce Wayne. He you know, you have the perfect life. Then he finds out he's Robin and he goes, does Bruce know you're working with Batman?
Right. So like, all of them are like that. Like Dick Grayson's identity is the worst kept secret in any comic book out there, according to this show, because everybody's figured out that he's Robin, but still not one of them is smart enough to put two and two together and figure out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And it's like, how's that not the first thing that comes to your mind? Because
that comes to the Playboy lifestyle of Bruce Wayne outside, you know, which went in the Christopher Nolan movies and all the, you know, other iterations where they say like, oh, he's, you know, away from the character, like, that can't be possible.
Well, right, but the thing is, so, you know, he becomes Robin at 10, 11, 12 years old, whatever, you know, however they portray it in this TV show. What other 30-year-old guy is this kid swinging around town with? Like, if it's not Bruce Wayne, who is it? You know? Like, there's just another dude that just shows up at the house, shows up and knocks on Bruce's door and says, I'm Batman. I'm going to take your kid out. you know, it's like, how do you not put that together? But, but yeah, I thought, you know, kind of going back to the whole circus thing, like this, so there's lots of things that happen in episode 6 that really define who Dick Grayson is going to be as a character going forward. And that's like really the first time. So, you know, you come to find out that, you know, there's murders that are going on and the people that he knew as a kid in the circus were starting to get murdered, and he and Jason team up and they're going after, the one guy, and I can't remember his name at all, but you know, the one guy that's still alive, and you know, they go to talk to him and they're trying to save him. And you know, you come to find out that the guy that's killing all the circus performers is the son of the guy that killed Dick's parents. And, through a series of flashbacks, you know, you get to see the moment where that guy died. And I think that's where, to me, that was where Dick needed to make a stand and be the hero. And, you know, because obviously he goes to murder this guy because, you know, he finds out who killed his parents and he goes there to seek revenge and he goes there to kill this guy and, you know, gets him up against the guardrail or whatever, and he's choking him out, and it's, you know, kind of washes over him a little bit that, hey, I'm not going to be this guy, and I'm not going to commit this murder. But then you see what happens is that, you know, the crime family also is stepping in because they want to keep this guy quiet because of what he knows, and they're going to kill him. And Robin makes the decision that I'm not going to kill him, but I'm not going to save him either. And he just kind of stands there and he watches it happen, which to me is the same as pulling the trigger yourself. You know, like if you're party to that, then you might as well have killed him yourself. And so this to me is when,
well, it's a callback to, I thought of it as a callback to Batman in Batman Begins at the end when he says to Ra's al Ghul, he's like, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you either. And he jumps out of the train as the train
but you know, again, and
plummets to his,
you know, we're not talking about that movie, but I didn't agree with that decision either, because the thing that went against Batman too. But you know, to me, this is where Dick Grayson becomes a murderer. Like he killed that guy by his inaction just as much as his action.
Well, that's a whole other debate. I don't know if you can necessarily say that because he don't you don't save somebody, it doesn't make you the murderer. I wouldn't go that far, because it depends on how. I mean,
look, when we were talking about Spider-Man 2 weeks ago, we commented about the statement that he made, where he didn't necessarily do the wrong thing, but he didn't always do the right thing. So this is exactly that in Titans. You know, he didn't.
Right.
He
it's
didn't
not
commit
the wrong
he didn't commit
thing,
the
but
murder,
it's not the right.
But
thing.
The right thing.
The wrong thing would be murdering.
Right. But the right thing would
he
be
didn't
to save
do the
him.
Right thing is to
right.
save him.
So
right.
there's a moral. There's some ambiguity there. You
right.
know, it is
well,
definitely a gray area.
Get...
But in my mind, that's where Dick becomes a murderer. Like, to me, I view it as that. Like, if you don't save him, you might as well have pulled the trigger yourself. Because, you know, again, in the comic book world, a hero would save him, and wouldn't let him be killed. So, but, you know, again, this...
Well, you say that, and it's, yeah, they're going darker, right. But I don't necessarily agree with that, because, I mean, especially, you know, going into the Arrow show. I mean, the first two seasons, he murdered everybody.
Well, right, but he didn't make any, but he didn't tell himself he wasn't killing people. Like, he wasn't
right,
going around
right.
saying he wasn't a murderer. He knew he was. And,
right.
you know, that was who that
well,
character
I think,
was.
I think Dick's living with his decision there, and I don't think he necessarily regrets it, but it is something that you have to live with. But I wouldn't go as far as calling him a murderer. That's all I'm saying. You're right. Is it the right thing? No. But I don't think it's the absolute wrong thing, because, you know, it's not like he had a bunch of choices at the time. It's not like he could have saved somebody else. He was the only one there. He could have saved him, but he didn't. Right. But it's not. I don't think it's like pulling the trigger. It's that's. I wouldn't. Say
I'll
that.
Agree to disagree. I mean, that's just you know, honestly, that's the way I see it. But
right.
But so yeah, so you know, and again, and while all this is happening, we're starting to figure out who Jason Todd is too, because. You know, there's another scene, you know, kind of before this. Actually, I don't remember exactly in the timeline. But, you know, we come to a scene where, you know, the police are closing in on Dick and Jason. And, you know, we cut to Jason Todd, and he's just, like, beating the tar out of all these cops. And that's when you come to realize that, you know, he's not really the good guy either. Because,
oh, God,
you know,
no.
That's not how
but
a hero
works. That's the wrong thing.
He's actively doing the wrong thing. Right.
He's seeking out
right.
violence against cops.
Right.
And, you know, because he thinks they're always against him. He's got a screw.
Right.
Loose.
And but that's when you come
and
to
I
realize
that's
that
what they're trying to portray.
You know, that's behavior that Batman is not aware of, because there's no
right.
way he condones that kind of behavior. So it's kind of like Jason Todd is the kid that's on. You know, he's kind of on vacation from his parents, and he's, you know, he's acting out
right.
and, you know, doing the wrong thing. But, and, you know, we all know, again, to anybody that's a fan of these characters and these stories, you know, we know who Jason Todd is, you know, and we know he becomes the Red Hood, and, you know, we know he's got these violent tendencies, but we didn't see it that early in the comics. You know, it didn't come out that this was his personality, you know, when he was early into being Robin, because, you know, Batman would have shut that down, and that would have never happened. So they're progressing his character a little bit too. But you wonder how many more times we're going to see him, and if we're going to get to see him, you know, as Red Hood. And I don't think we see it this season, but they've definitely set that up, and I don't think it's something they're going to let,
yeah.
they're just going to let dangle and go away. So,
Well, that's why I think eventually we're going to see a Batman. They're setting up too many questions for there not to be answers from Bruce Wayne. So what I mean is you got this whole dynamic going between Dick and Jason with Batman in the middle. I'm not saying this season, but in the future, right. how do you not throw Bruce Wayne in the middle to settle the dispute between them?
Well, right. I don't know.
You can't always have them going, well, Bruce told me this, right. and then Bruce told me this. you know, that would get old real fast. Right. It really feels like they're setting up something where, you know, Batman's going to show up.
Well, and you just wonder because you say Batman's in the middle, but I don't know that Batman knows that he's in the middle of anything. Like,
but that's what I mean. Know. It's like, so Jason's acting this way, like you said, Jason's acting this way away from Batman. Right. But so that's just one example there where, you know, Dick is going to go to Bruce and be like, do you know what he's doing? You know, I've got my own demons here. I feel bad because I didn't save a guy that's a known criminal. This guy's going up to cops and beating the crap out of him. I don't think you condone that.
Right.
But I don't see that getting taken care of in a letter or an email. That's one of those things where you would have a face-to-face, and so we get to meet Bruce Wayne. Maybe not Batman, but you meet Bruce Wayne.
I mean, anything's possible. You know, obviously DC owns all these characters, so nothing's out of the realm of possibility. You know, Superman on Supergirl, so clearly they can bring these major characters to TV if they want to. And, you know, we have Gotham, where basically you have Bruce Wayne on TV already. So I just don't know if we see it. It's definitely not this season, because I think their biggest reason why you wouldn't want to see Batman is because I think they want this show to survive on their own merits and not have to basically play the Batman card to get to get people involved in it. But who knows, maybe season two or season three, if this thing picks up steam, then I don't see any reason why we couldn't see that. But
just by the name of the app, the DC Universe, I think we said it before, I wouldn't be surprised if all of these shows start to intertwine.
Right.
And, like, you're going to get a Jason Todd show. You're going to get, we already know Doom Patrol. You're going to get, and then Batman shows up here, he shows up there, and all of these characters, basically they're creating a more elaborate Arrowverse.
Right.
And, you know, I and it's all, you know, on demand, online.
Right.
It's all in this app. And a year from now, we're going to be, I think it's going to be more elaborate. 2 years from now, be huge.
Well, like I said, who knows? Anything's possible. And, you know, I'd sure like to see it happen. The other thing that just kind of came to my mind while we were sitting here talking is that we were theorizing a minute ago that, you know, Bruce might not have been aware of Jason, you know, even being there or, you know, being involved with Dick, but he's got those trackers. So he knows exactly where Jason is. So I don't think there's no way that, you know, and we know halfway through the episode, Dick took the tracker out of his arm, but for at least some period of time, those trackers were beeping in the same place. So Bruce has to know that they were together. So I don't think he's off on a completely unsanctioned mission, but he definitely doesn't know the circumstances about what's going on, you know, with Jason once he gets there.
His mental aspect.
So then you wonder, you wonder what kind of vetting process Batman has for getting these guys into the Robin costume, because he's
young, disturbed.
Yeah, he's batting 0-for-2 right now.
You know,
so we know Batman's a lot of things, but he's not a great judge of character, I guess.
I don't think Dick Grayson's character is that.
Well,
bad.
He's killing people, So anyways, let's because we're 2 hours into this podcast already, and we've got two more episodes to talk about. So we move into episode 7, and this is where they're kind of trapped in the asylum where. Where the nuclear family was created, and, you know, we come to find out that Raven's mother is being held there.
Right, and that's pretty much the gist of – that's why I said that episode was kind of it slowed down a little, because the Jason Todd episode was so, you know.
Right.
But I'm not saying that this wasn't good. It was good in a different way, and here's what I took from it. Exactly what you just said. The nuclear family was developed there, was made, in air quotes there. You saw at the beginning of the episode, the new father, he was made there. And they used the term, when is he going to be, what is it, baked? Is it, when is he going to be?
Yeah, something like that. When is he going to be cooked?
Something like that.
I think it's when he's.
When is he going to be cooked? So the one thing that I took from that episode, and then it plays into episode 8, is I don't trust her mother.
Well, no, I don't either.
At all.
I don't either.
It's, I mean, because she comes from that asylum where they break you down and train you to act a certain way. And there's nothing you can do about it. So, obviously, Dick Grayson gets, they try to do it to him, but he was able to beat it enough before they rescued him. But I don't trust the mother. And jumping to episode 8, does she, in the comics, the mother, is there any anything about her being able to, what's the word? Suppress Raven's powers?
I don't remember anything like that in the comics.
Because, so, first off, I don't trust anything she says. I don't think Raven does either.
Rachel completely buys everything she says.
I don't know, and this is why. When they were on the train in episode 8 together, and she's sitting there talking to her, Rachel has that real look of skepticism on her face when her mother's talking to her. She's asking her mother questions, and then when she's answering, she wasn't looking in awe. She was really asking with her face was really questioning what her mother was saying. And then she looks off into her reflection and nothing. Usually her reflection tells her, like, you know, comes out, the demon comes out. She's got nothing. So she's, I think she's starting to wonder, is this really my mom? Is she really, or is it my mom and she's been brainwashed? I think she's on to it as well.
I don't know. I think she's just so overjoyed to have her mom back that I think she's buying everything hook, line, and sinker, but I don't trust the mother as far as I could throw her. But, you know, you said this is, you know, you mentioned where you thought this is the episode where everything slowed down, and it definitely was a slowdown in kind of like the action department. But this was an episode about character study, because honestly, this is the episode where every single member of the team became murderers. You know, Rachel and you know, because in the beginning, you know, it starts off with them kind of back at the safe house where they're all holed up, and they've got the doctor, Dr. Omelet Maker, chained to, you know, the sink in the bathroom. And Rachel goes in to talk to him, and he, you know, breaks the shower glass or something and slits his throat.
Right, slits his
to
own
get
throat.
Rachel to save him. And, you know, she doesn't know she can save him, but her powers come out and she's able to save him. But then later on in the episode, she confronts him and basically doesn't like what he has to say. So she says, "Well, I take it all back." And then instantly his throat kind of opens back up again and he bleeds out and he dies. You know, fast forward a little while longer and, you know, they kind of get into trouble again and, you know, they're rescuing Garfield out of his cage and Rachel comes under attack and he totally tigers out and, you know, rips the guy's throat out. Now, granted,
He bites the guy, kills him. He's covered in the guy's human blood.
Now, granted,
he turns back and
he's instantly regretful. Like, you know, he was definitely caught up in the heat of the moment. And
well, he had never
bitten somebody before. But in his case, you know, there's, you know, the animal instincts take over and he goes into protective mode. But all that being said, he's killed that guy. So there's number two. And then, you know, you fast forward even a little bit longer and everybody's kind of going to safety and Dick and Corey are there in the hallway and he says, "Look, we got to end this thing. We got to burn it all to the ground." And, you know, you've got, you know, kind of like the gas or kerosene or whatever the heck's all over the floor that's, you know, flammable. And
it's the gas from
right,
the lines.
Right, the gas from the lines.
Remember, they heard
right.
the gas
so,
in the... At the-
so,
propane-like
she
gas,
she looks gas. At him and says, you know, "Are we really doing this?" And once again, you know, Dick hesitates because this is the second time in two episodes he has to make this kind of moral decision on whether he's going to be a killer or not. And, you know, you really think, you know, in my heart of hearts, I just knew he was going to turn around and say, this is not who we are. And, you know, they weren't going to do it. Instead, he turns around and basically says, light her up. And, you know,
yeah.
she lights the thing up and, you know, the whole thing goes up in flames, killing everybody that was inside. All the guards, all the doctors, anybody that's left gets killed. So now he and Corey are also murderers. So, you know, at this point, this is where I have said what I mentioned earlier, that they are now, you know, no longer the Titans that I'm that I'm familiar with in the comics. Can you argue that everything was justified? Of course you can, especially based on what we're used to seeing. And, you know, we're used to seeing action movies where the heroes kill the bad guys. And so it's not like something that we're not used to seeing, but it is a little bit right. unusual for our comic book TV shows and movies, because that is usually the line that gets drawn.
But that's consistent with the show, though. The show started with the F Batman, right. and here we are now. They didn't do that in the past either on Titans.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. It just proves my point from the beginning that, you know, and I'm not saying this in any way to take away from the show because I love the show, but these are not the characters that, you know, I'm used to and that, you know, we're used to from the comics.
Right.
Once you realize that, then the show takes on kind of a different, you know, a different perspective. But, you know, at this point, like, they've kind of all gotten away. They're all standing outside the burning asylum or hospital or whatever it is. And then we kind of cut to the ground, and that's where you see, you know, basically the Robin costume that's on fire. You know,
burning.
It's burning. And so you know at this point that Robin is, you know, he's not Robin anymore. You know, he's already made up his mind that that's it. And, you know, you kind of see some of that through the flashbacks that are happening when he's in the chair and he's trying to get out of the asylum. You know, he goes through these different phases
yeah.
where, you know, he meets his younger self and, you know, his younger self isn't really happy at all with what he's become and the way his life's going. You know, and this was kind of said on the DC Daily show as well, but, you know, then he kind of flashes back to being in the Batcave and, you know, Bruce is off in the distance and he's kind of calling out to him and Bruce has almost kind of turned his back on him. So, you know, he's got this feeling that, you know, he's not who he wants to be or who he thought he was going to be. You know, he's definitely not who he thought he was going to be when he was a kid and started out on this journey. You know, he's kind of not who Batman thought he was going to be. You know, he kind of feels like maybe, you know, that bridge is burned and there's no going back. So, I don't know. I thought there was a lot that happened to develop the character. I think, to me, this is the episode that developed these characters more than any of the other six that came before it, you know.
Developed
all like, by the end,
separate from the comics.
Well, separate
yeah,
from
really,
the comics, but
really
I guess
separated
but
them.
By the end of this yeah by the end of this episode we really knew who all these characters were. You know, we kind of knew what they were capable of, and we knew,
even though Corey still doesn't
she
know
doesn't
who
know
is.
Who she is, but we kind of know.
Yeah,
you know, so, you know, I think a lot happened in that episode, and you know, I thought it was one of the actually I thought it was one of the better ones, even
but,
though
right, and that's and that really gets back to the whole it's a slow burn thing where
right.
it's you're right, it's not as action packed, but there's a lot to digest
right.
there. There's a lot of and I mean there's a lot to discuss. I mean, we could go on all night about our opinions on which way I think it
yeah,
going.
We obviously, you know, we kind of feel a little bit differently about this, you know, this, and we have different opinions of it, but
yeah, but and that's what's
well,
fun
yeah,
about it,
I mean,
really.
That's
it's like they're really developing it, and it's, you know, keep harping on it, but just how this is going to branch
right.
off into other things, it's in other things to talk about. It's, but getting to episode 8,
right.
It's so they're in Chicago, right. which I thought was pretty cool. Because that's where Christopher Nolan's Gotham right. was. That's what he used. I thought that was pretty cool. But this episode was basically centered around Donna Troy and the rest of the team, in air quotes, trying to get to Rachel's mom's right. house, which I thought was funny because she hadn't been there in, what did she say, like five or six years or something? 5 or 6 years, but the key was exactly where she left it, like right there on the wall or whatever.
Right, well, in the...
She's like, oh, look at that, it still works. I thought that was
and the
shady.
Electricity was still on. Come on. Yeah, I mean, there was things that happened there, but, you know, to me, this was the episode, especially after I knew that Donna Troy was coming, that I looked most forward to. I love that character. My favorite comic book I've ever read is Teen Titans 38, Who is Donna Troy? To this day, it's still my favorite comic book ever.
Was that the picture
that
you
sent out?
Yeah,
I actually posted it on Twitter today in another
feed. That's the one that, yeah, I have that one. If you hadn't sent that one out, that's what I would have sent out. I have it on my phone already. I love
that. So it's such a great comic, and I hadn't read it in years, but I knew that we were going to talk about it tonight, so I read it again the night before last, and still, it's still my favorite comic book ever. So I knew that wasn't going to be what this episode was about, but that dynamic between Dick and Donna and the relationship they've always had in the comics, which I think that particular issue brings out more than any of the other ones I ever read. I was just so looking forward to these characters coming together in this show. But all that being said, I have to say this was, to me, the weakest. I was a little disappointed with this whole episode. Was.
It
wasn't quite what I was hoping to get out of Donna. I mean, they still had some great interactions, and they did a pretty good job of giving some of the backstory. And I really loved all the Bruce and Diana talk. Even though we may never see Wonder Woman or Bruce in the show, we might not.
Yeah, at the very beginning. But, and they're saying, like, oh, it's Donna says, oh, it's Justice League talk. That, you know, Justice League issues or whatever. But it was pretty cool that Dick, the young version of Dick, was talking to Donna and saying, like, about the he went on the mission with Batman and Wonder Woman. So it was early, you know, he's already part of the Justice League or working with them. But it was pretty cool how they started explaining that behind the scenes stuff. So, like, you know, not to compare this to Super Friends, but you watch a Super Friends episode and they go and do their own thing, or you watch a Justice League or Young Justice, but you don't get the behind the scenes part that you get in this episode. Where he comes back from a mission and he's disturbed by what just happened. We weren't able to save everybody. You know, a lot of people died. The Joker's crazy.
Which I just, like you said, I love all that talk. Like, we may never get to see him, but we know that this stuff is going on. Like, they're fighting the Joker. Yeah. You know, Batman, Robin, and Wonder Woman are out there.
But I thought it was a really good episode because it's... And I thought this before I saw the interview, but it's more that slow burn thing where it's like, we're not going to give you Donna Troy. We're just giving you a taste.
Right. Now it wasn't.
So that you'll get more later and you'll want more later. And I really did. It's like by the end of the episode, you're like, you can't wait for more from that part of the story.
Right. And I didn't, obviously I didn't expect to see her in any kind of Wonder Girl costume or anything like that. But I don't know. I guess I was just
closet.
I was just hoping for a little bit more there. I really did like the fact, and I know she talked about this on the interview she did on DC Daily, that she knew Dick so well that, like, she wasn't surprised at all when he came knocking on the door. It was almost like, you know, he knocked on the door and she was on her way out and she just came out.
She knew he was there.
And, hey, Dick. You know, no problem. You can sleep on my couch and let's go. You know, we'll talk while we're walking.
I didn't notice it the first time. She opens the door and doesn't he? He has like a backpack over his shoulder.
Yeah.
And she just takes the backpack, throws it inside the door, and goes, "Let's go." Like, I know you're staying here, so here, let me take that from you, and then we'll leave.
Right, and I love, I like the actress. I love the choice. Like, I think she's, like, that, I thought that was great. I think she's a great Donna Troy, and I think all that's going to be good. But I don't know, something about it just didn't resonate with me. The whole, kind of the mission she was on with the animal hunters and all that, I don't know, it just kind of fell a little flat for me. But I'm still, you know, I'm really, really excited to see what goes forward with her.
See, what I think she was doing is, or what the purpose of the episode was, Dick's looking for a way out. And he's asking her, how did you do it? And she's like, well, it takes time. But she's also kind of showing him. And the purpose of the episode, the way they wrote the episode, was to show, like, look, I'm going to take these guys down. That whole animal thing, the where they're the animal poachers. Robin comes, or Dick comes in street clothes, acting like Robin, beats the crap out of everybody because that's his answer to everything. Right. And where you're like, I don't really like the whole animal poachers thing. What are they doing? It's, she's trying to say, I'm taking them down. I'm just doing it in a different way.
Right. Well, I mean, I understand.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be violent. You don't have to be Robin to still bring justice.
I understand all that.
And that's what she was trying to say.
I don't know. Like I said, something about it just felt flat. I guess I had higher expectations for the episode than what it was. And, you know, it just is probably me expecting something different than what we got.
See, I didn't have any of those expectations, and I was just,
like I said,
enthralled.
Something about it just, like I said, it didn't really resonate with me. I did love the interactions between the two characters, though. You know, you really believe that they were, you know, that's a brother and sister relationship. You know, it was never a boyfriend girlfriend type of situation in the comics, and it's definitely not that here. You know, it's definitely like, I'm the older sister and you're the younger brother. And, you know, again, I don't want to keep referencing something they talked about on DC Daily that wasn't in the show, but anybody that's watched the show also has access to DC Daily, so go ahead and watch it. But, you know, throughout the history of the comics, you know, Dick has always been the leader. You know, he's always been in charge, but it seems like here he keeps deferring to Donna, you know, and he's really asking her to tell him what to do. And so I liked that dynamic a lot, and
well, because even leaders need somebody that they can lean on,
right? But it was more, not even so, it was like, how do I live my life here? It's not even like tactically, what should I, you know, how do we go through this?
I think tactically he's fine.
It's more like,
I don't think he doubts himself at all that way.
It's more like, tell me how to live my life at this point. Like, I don't know how to be Robin, or I don't want to be Robin. I don't know how to be a civilian, you know, so what do I do here? And he's really looking at her to give him the answers, and she's not going to outright tell him what to do, but she's going to kind of try to guide him to make his own decision. But I don't know, like I said, that part of it was really good, and I do look forward.
Yeah, she didn't just come out and say, be Nightwing.
Well, so here's the thing that bothered me a little bit is that, you know, so I'm watching the credits at the end of this show, and, you know, they start to list off, you know, of course, all the, you know, Robin, Brenton, Thwaites, and all this thing. And then it says, and guest starring Connor Leslie as Donna Troy. And so I'm thinking, oh, my God, is like, are we only going to get one or two episodes with her? Because she's got to be in the show, right? So, of course, I got to run to the IMDb when I'm done with it. And, you know, they list her in, like, 16 episodes. So she's definitely not going anywhere.
Right.
But I was afraid that she was going to be
season two.
Yeah, I was afraid that she was just going to be a kind of an in and out character after I saw and guest starring. But it looks like she's going to be here to stay. So I'm really hoping that she becomes a fixture in the team, and, you know, we get the whole Wonder Girl. You know, at some point we're going to see them all in their suits, and you know, I really look forward to seeing that, you know, and how that goes. But but, you know, like you said, and like you were saying, the other major storyline in this episode was, you know, with, you know, Rachel and her mom and Corey, and them all trying to get to her house. So finally they get to the house and, you know, all the shadiness aside, like I said, we don't trust the mom and, you know, who knows what's going on with that. But the biggest thing, the bigger part of it is that, Rachel has figured out that she can heal things because she healed the doctor. So she gets it in her mind that she can heal Corey's amnesia. So we get to the end of that episode, that right? Well. And so she sits down and she says, well, let me try to heal you. So while that's happening simultaneously, you know, somehow Donna sees Dick's phone or whatever and sees the writing of Corey's and says, well, why do you have this Sumerian writing or whatever it is on your phone? And come to find out that she can read it. So as
she could translate it with right, her books. But she's even not 100% sure in her translation.
No, but as it's all unfolding simultaneously, we're seeing Rachel trying to do the healing of Corey. Meanwhile, Dick and Donna are going through translating the book. And, like, that's kind of when all hell breaks loose, right? Like, she finally unlocks Corey.
Well, that's
kind of unlocks Corey's memory. And while that's being said, you know, Donna's telling Dick, you know, the Starfire has to catch the Raven or something to that effect. And, you know.
Right. Oh, no, has to.
Has
to.
They,
her translation is weak. She's not really sure which way it goes because it's one of those, like, you know, aloha.
Has to find the. Right. Kind of has to find the Raven, I guess. Secure the Raven. Right. That's what I was looking
for. Secure the Raven. Does that mean you have to. Right. To take care of it, or and then, but she's like, according to what I'm reading, it's like she has to destroy her,
right?
Or something. And then they flip to the scene, and all of a sudden, Starfire gets whatever. You don't even know what she gets. Just she starts glowing and grabs Raven by the throat, and we're on to Hawk.
Right.
And
so then, yeah. So then, right. So then we get the end of
Hank and
Dawn. We get to the end of that episode, and. You know, Corey's got Raven by the throat, and it looks like she's going to kill her. And then we get that whole Daredevil season 3. In the middle, we get the Karen Page episode. And it looks like all of a sudden we're going to get the Hawk and Dove episode for number 9.
Well, it actually, it's called Hank and Dawn. So it's not even – it's like the – by the way, you know, you've got Raven by the
throat. And we're going to have to wait 2 weeks.
You know, Starfire's glowing. We've got – you've got – Dick and
Donna racing to the house to try to
Donna driving down the road in a with a poor translation. Right. Oh, this would be a good time for an origin
story. let's make them wait 2 weeks. So I'm sure it'll be a good episode, but it's really not the episode that I want to see next week.
Right, and as soon as episode 8 ended, I was like, are you kidding me? I got to wait a week for this. And then they do the trailer for what's coming next week. I go, are you kidding me? I got to wait 2 weeks.
Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled. And I'm going to watch this whole episode a little bit aggravated, even though it'll probably be a good episode.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, let's just get to the good stuff. But it kind of, what I get from the fact that they're doing this in episode 9 is that we're definitely not done with these characters. Which is a good thing, because I really like Hawk and Dove, and, you know, honestly, we haven't really seen them since, like, the beginning of episode 4, where she's in the, or episode 3, or whatever it was, where she's in the hospital, and, you know, Hank and Dick, I think, had one more interaction where they didn't get along too well, but you kind of got the feeling that maybe we weren't going to see these guys again, and this just lets me know that they're still a part of the story. Because there's no reason to interject their origin on episode 9 if they were just going to go away. So, so that's the good part of that. But the bad is that we have to wait basically two weeks.
Well, you're right in the middle of a very very suspenseful part. So,
hey, that it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, we went pretty deep on all of these, and we're way long. This is definitely the longest podcast we've ever had. I thought last week at 2 weeks was stretching it. We're going to be easily 2.5, maybe 2 hours and 45 minutes by the time we're done.
No, we can wrap this up on beat.
Yeah. But, well, I just say, just to sum it all up, if it hasn't come through yet, This is such a good show. Like, if you're not watching it, I don't know what you're waiting for. You need to get on it and start watching this show, because, you know, again, to me, it still doesn't top season three of Daredevil, but it is up there with some of the best stuff I've ever seen.
We may want to hit. We'll see what it's like in the next couple of weeks. We may want to hit on this again in two weeks. Because these are long.
Yeah, I don't know. It took us a long time
to go through all these episodes. And then by the end of it, we're going to wrap up the whole entire thing with the last two. But we got a busy couple weeks coming up, because we've got
Into the Spider-Verse. Aquaman. There's going to be a lot coming up to talk about. So, stay tuned.
Yeah. So, all right. That should do it for this week. You can reach us on Twitter at @brightside_chat. Email us at brightsidechat@gmail.com. Listen to us on iTunes, The Brightside Chat, Google Play, search us up The Brightside Chat, and Facebook.
Facebook.com/TheBrightsideChat.
There we go. And thank you to our sponsors.
You're welcome.
Arkham Comics and Games, Legends Comics and Games, and Rubber Chicken Comics. And that should do it for this week. I am going to bed.
All right. Peace.
Hey, Fred.
All right, so the views and opinions expressed by DJ and John on this podcast do not reflect those of any rational, sane-thinking human being. Thank you.
There we go.
Let me do that one more time.
Go ahead.
All right. So the views and opinions expressed by John and DJ...
Try it again without the so.
The views and opinions expressed by Don and DJ... Bye. Take three. The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent, sane, thinking...
It's not easy, is it?
No.
It sucks. Do you have it written in front of you?
No, I do not. I'm just making it up.
Oh, okay.
The views That's and opinions... Yeah, okay. The views and... Now I can't... Now it's just like the end of Cannonball Run where I'm Dom DeLuise and I can't say anything.
Oh God. Dom and DJ. No, yeah. John and DJ.
Alright. The views and opinions expressed by Dom The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human beings. Thank you. Oh, no, I'm sorry. One more time.
Oh, Jesus.
One more time.
Go ahead.
The views and... Two more times. The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human beings. I know solely the property of thebrightsidechat.com. Thank you. It's not .com, though.